This is the Rich Eisen Show.
I want to remind you all.
This is the Rich Eisen Show with guest host Susie Schuster.
The best teams in the NFL, top to bottom, are the Dolphins and the Vikings.
Live from the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
The Chiefs were an F minus.
The Chiefs got an F minus.
The Chiefs got an F minus. The Steelers got an F.
Today's guests: Chris Mad Dog Russo, longtime NFL writer Peter King, actor and roast master general Jeffrey Ross, and now sitting in for Rich, it's Susie Schuster.
Well, hi there, everybody. Susie Schuster back in the seat for Rich Eisen, which is, of course, in Indianapolis, and I am thrilled to be with you this week. I'm back tomorrow, too, so don't go away. But, guys, TJ Jefferson, how are you?
Hey, I'm great, Susie. How are you?
Good to see you. And Mikey D, how are you this morning?
I'm doing well, Susie.
You with us,
morning.
Mikey? You with us?
Yeah, I'm with only for 2 hours.
What
does that mean?
Pitcher what do you mean?
In. Jason will be the last hour.
Okay.
I got some Michigan basketball.
Oh.
So I got tonight. I got Michigan Rutgers.
Nobody cares.
So
the
you're dumping us.
Didn't let
I
me
see.
In the school that beat me in the Final Four.
Good to know that you're dumping us. I've been here for 2 hours.
I'm
so good
sorry.
To tell me
I
now, but thanks so much
if
for that.
You see me get up, you're going to be like, sad.
No, I know. I am sad. I'm
Jason's
sad.
Jason's going to be happy now.
Hey, Chris.
Hey.
Hey, how are you?
Hey, I look better every day, so I'm great.
Is that right? Good to know. Hi, everybody. Thanks for tuning in to the Rich Eisen Show, also known as the How Do I Look Chris Brockman Show, but just found that out anyway. Chris Russo joining us on the show today.
Hey, doggy.
I got to tell you, I'm so excited about this. I try to book the show. You know, Liz Wald is in charge of all the booking here, and Rich has a crack staff booking duo on top of that, but I try to do a lot of the stuff on my own. This was for my brother, because my brother's obsessed with Mad Dog, and so he's like, can you get him on? Can you get him on? And I said, finally, I'm like, I'm going to pull the trigger for my brother Scott. So Mad Dog Russo coming on. I won't call him Mad Dog. I don't think, I mean, I call him Doggy? Do I call him Chris? Christopher? Yeah. I'm going to ask him how he wants to be called, because here's the deal.
I want to call him Christopher, Mike.
I was just kidding.
I mean, sometimes I call you Christopher if I think you're being insouciant. But that's
yeah,
in the end
when
over
you
there.
Hear Christopher come out of Susie's
big
mouth.
Word alert.
You know, I feel like, I'll ask him about Chicago because I'd like to know what he thinks about the Bears. But at the same time, I think he's so fascinating. And half the time when I sit in the chair here, I'm just asking questions that I think are interesting to me. And I hope that they're interesting to you, too. So we're going to have him we have an idea for maybe a start bench cut for him that I think that you will very much enjoy. Peter King will join us as well. Obviously, he announced this week that he is retiring from writing his column. He'll be doing lots of other things, but love to have Peter on. And again, we can ask him about what's going to happen in Chicago, but I'm more interested in the stories that got away from him, the stories that make him most proud, maybe even the stories that he feels like he failed. I think he's such a fascinating, as we talk about Mount Rushmore, he's it. He's on it. And so thrilled to have Peter King as well. Jeffrey Ross, the comedian who we've been friends with for 30 years, having him come on to promote his upcoming movie called Ricky Stenicki. You heard it here first. It's incredible. And also, he's got his Take a Banana for the Ride solo show. So he's going to come on and break all of that down. And just listening to him talk, I could pretty much listen to him all day. He's hysterical and great and speaks from the heart. And oh, by the way, the show is called The Rich Eisen Show. Rich will, in fact, zoom in, of course, from Indianapolis and let us know what he's up to over there. But guys, we got to start first. I mean, I thought it was going to be all combine all the time, but about 9 o'clock last night, I'm trying to get my kids to bed so I can actually pay attention to the world. And then I look at my phone and I'm like, oh, what the hell's going on at the Staples Center? And I still call it the Staples Center. I'm sorry, the crypto arena. Whatever. I mean,
it's Staples.
It's Staples. Thank you, Mikey. And just, I said, guys, let's all go. They're like, Mom, it's bedtime. I'm like, let's go watch this game. And we just watched an absolute LeBron clinic. Just a clinic. We watched that incredible run that the Lakers put on. And really, I mean, let's face it, LeBron put on a 39-16 run to close out the fourth. I mean, I always say to TJ, TJ, keep me straight on the numbers because God knows I'm not a numbers person. Math scares me.
And I am.
And I said, TJ, keep me honest here. But a 21-point fourth-quarter comeback by the Lakers to beat the Clip Joint.
Lakers.
A 19-3 run in 4 minutes. It seemed like all LeBron was doing was dominating. Now, the other thing I pointed out to TJ was, and you know, we talked about Daniel Theis coming out to guard him on the perimeter. And all LeBron would do is, like, look at him like, really? This is what you're giving me? And just that classic step back and boom.
Boom.
It was a thing of beauty. 34 points for LeBron, 19 in the fourth quarter, 5 threes, 13 of 21. You guys, it was, and you know what I loved about watching this game last night, and, you know, when I've sat in this chair before, sometimes I've said, like, he's not my favorite guy to cover in the world. I appreciate everything about who he is as a player, but I watched last night and I thought, how does he still have the energy to do this night after night? Now, let's not forget they are the ninth seed. A lot of excitement, a lot of frenzy after that last night. He can't play like that all the time, and yet they need him to be relevant. But wow, Chris, watching him sit back and launch, penetrate at will, doing whatever he wanted, and then guarding Kawhi Leonard for half the game. I don't know. It's a thing of beauty.
It's fun. My feelings about LeBron are kind of whatever, TJ. I mean, but let's appreciate what we're watching.
You know, absolutely.
It's a guy in his 20th year. He's going to be 40 this coming season, later this year. And it's Tom Brady stuff. It's stuff that you're not supposed to see. Guys this age aren't supposed to do it at this level. The problem for the Lakers is it's going to take this kind of effort from LeBron every single night to keep them in the playoff hunt, to keep them in the play-in round, to keep them in the – try to get them into the top six. And that's a problem if we're just talking about from a basketball standpoint, because I don't think that this type of production night in and night out is sustainable for him. You know, that he needs some help, which is why he was kind of hanging at the trade deadline to get some guys in there. But just to sit back on a Wednesday night and kind of watch this – performance. I know it sucks, TJ, you're a Clipper fan, they blew a huge lead, but you got to be like, damn, that was unbelievable to watch.
Yeah, I mean, I got this. This is just me personally. You know, so many times we pick and choose the players that we love to watch, and then we'll be like, oh, I don't like this guy or I don't like that team. And you let those biases kind of take you away from, like, just overall good basketball. Mm-hmm. And I used to be like that with Kobe and the Lakers. I disliked the Lakers so much that I didn't really appreciate Kobe and what was going on right down the street from me every day. And so I told myself at a point that, like, after I realized that, I was never going to be that way with another player. So I do. I appreciate and I understand historically what we're seeing with LeBron James. This man's about to eclipse the 40,000-point plateau. These are numbers you're never going to see again. Like, it's just never going to happen. Scoring record will never be broken. No one's going to be able to be as good for such a sustained period. And like you said, Chris, he can't do it every night. But those nights when he is able to reach into the bag and make it happen, it's kind of special. You know, even when he's doing it against, you know, your favorite squad. Mm-hmm. But it was just like one of those moments where, you know, Susie, once the momentum turns, got to the 4 minute mark, Anthony Davis is at the line. He makes two foul shots. He ties the game. Clippers miss. LeBron comes down, hits Rui Hachimura, hits a three, puts him up, and that was pretty much it. But you could feel the tide just change.
Yeah, the Clippers coach, Ty Lue, basically played Captain Obvious. He was like, you just can't let LeBron get hot. It's like, really?
I mean,
you just can't let LeBron get hot.
Yeah, obviously.
40 points away from 40,000. Has the player even been born who can come close to that? Does the NBA need to change the court and the shape of the court and push the line back or forward or whatever to have a player come close to this? We are watching history. By the way, LeBron at 39, I was doing a little research. Don't get scared. Fifth in the league in minutes played. And that goes back to what you were saying, Chris. And that's about keeping your body in the greatest of shape, a la TB12. How does he do it night after night? How does he have the energy? And what does he do? And can I have some? Because something is working. Here's LeBron James after the game.
Just in the zone. I mean, I know we've kind of heard this you know, what it feels like to be in the zone, you know, in our sport, and that's just a feeling. Where you feel like everything that you put up is going in, and you know, with the, you know, for me, I kept it consistent. I wasn't taking ill-advised shots. I stayed in the course of the offense. When I was able to get the switches, I was able to give myself some space and get a couple more looks. You know, so my teammates did a great job of continuing to find me. You know, and then I just try to dictate the tempo, dictate the game, you know, as we started making a run for it and getting the game closer and closer and closer. So, you know, it's just a zone that you just can't really describe it. You wish you could stay in it forever, but obviously it checks out, you know, as the game ends. But, you know, during it, you don't feel anything. You just have a superpower, I feel.
Then you got to wonder how he feels the next morning when he wakes up after that, right? And he's going to go back, and it's the Wizards tonight.
He probably sipped some of those chambers, so he probably didn't feel anything.
Hyperbaric?
Right? Yeah.
So he's got the Wizards tonight, I believe, at the Downtown Hoops Dojo, and
he's
I have a feeling.
Set out, right?
Dojo.
Is this a load management game, do you think?
It feels like it.
I mean.
It has all the makings of one.
Darvin, new phone, who dis, right? I mean, like, might take the night off.
Here's, I'm just going to stay home tonight.
Your 49-year-old put in work last night. He might deserve a bit of a day off.
It's a little crazy. Here's Darvin Ham after the game talking about LeBron James. And just marveling at what he saw.
Man, everybody's just pushing him on, cheering him on. You know, he had to take the cape tucked under his seat on the bench, I guess. It was time for him to whip it out. And he definitely did that, put the cape on, and just got aggressive and got in a good rhythm. He's been shooting the ball, you know, extremely well this whole entire season. And that was just another case of it. You know, once he got in rhythm and, you know, with his playmaking skills, he sets the tone with his three, with his shooting and going downhill. But then once they start scheming and trying to hit and double team late, he was able to pick him apart with the pass. And that's just who he is.
Yeah, James single-handedly outscoring the Clippers 19-16 in the final frame, including 5-for-8 from three with 4 assists to close out the hallway, the back-to-back.
Yeah.
I mean, you okay this morning, TJ? You all right? And you pointed out Paul George is out.
Mm-hmm.
Zubats is out.
I had to say something to make myself feel yeah, good about the
exactly
result.
Right.
Trying to prop you up, you babe.
Look, I'm in the Laker. I'm in.
I mean,
text
you are
chain
in the 4 seed.
Yeah, I'm in the text chain with 2 Laker fans, Double A and Daniel. And like every year when the Clippers were just housing the Lakers every year, I would send something. They'd be like, "Oh, regular season really means a lot." So now the Lakers have beat us in the regular season, and these guys are trying to like make it seem like they won the title last night, Chris. And it's just like, wait a minute, we beat you guys like 13 games in a row, yep, and it like didn't count for anything, and now you win a game, you win a series finally, and it's, oh, the Lakers are back. I don't know about that, but well, whatever. It was a spectacular effort by them. The Clippers just had a tremendous letdown. They just, I don't, it was like they stopped caring, guys.
Yeah, they're still, like, Lakers are still the 9th seed. They're half a game ahead of Golden State for the 10th seed. So it's not like they're blowing anybody away or lighting the house on fire or, you know, in the top four or anything. They still got a lot of work to do and a long way to go if they're going to even win a playoff series.
Well, that's it. I mean, to even get into the playoffs, to even be there, I mean, that's not a guarantee. So
yeah, they're playing well. They've won 7 of the last 10, so they're trending in the right direction. Can it keep up for the last 6 weeks of the year, you know, remains to be seen.
But they probably should. When you look at this team, like, you take all the stats when you just, you know, they say on paper. This is a playoff team on paper, so they should be.
The thing is, they've been a terrible road team. They're awesome at home, 29 at home.
And that's what I get. Like, it doesn't
7 games
sense
under on the road. It hasn't been translating away from Staples. But we
haven't heard the friction in the locker room stories the last couple weeks, so.
No, because it looked like Darvin Ham was going to get got there for a minute
right,
early in the season. And, you know, and they've kind of righted that ship, so to speak. We'll see how they close. You know, there's 22 games left.
I mean, is it time? It's so funny because if you listen to sports radio in this town, in Los Angeles, I mean, the complaint department is open 24/7.
Always.
Not as bad as Boston, not as bad as Philadelphia. But, you know, why does the team defer to LeBron James and why do they build around him? And you know, you watch games like last night and you think, well, if you can start putting these back together, then it's the Lakers that they thought they were going to get when they got him.
Yeah.
But, man, I mean, D'Angelo Russell, he did have that one time where I think it was LeBron dishing out to him in the corner, looked like he was going to take the three, and then he just penetrated at will and then silenced the crowd. And I was like, oof.
He also had a big cold three during that run, too. And like I said, they've definitely got talent on this team. So it's going to be interesting to see how they finish up.
Yep. 844-204-RICH is the number. You know I love to take calls, so start calling in. A little free advice. I'm happy to dish it out for you. 844-204-RICH. Good morning to everybody on Sirius, and good morning as well and afternoon to all of you on Roku. We're thrilled to see you. And by the way, don't forget that this show repeats itself on Roku. So if you missed a little bit of it, don't worry. Come on back. Find us wherever you find us. But Rich will join us ahead. But first, it is Chris Mad Dog Russo. Ooh. I mean, the amount of questions I have, we could go 3 hours. I'll try to go 12 minutes. This is The Rich Eisen Show.
Let's talk Sleep Number, people, because quality sleep is so essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs, and the same thing for your partner, so you can choose what's right for each of you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side, helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature, quiets your snores or your partner's? Sleep Number does that. My Sleep Number setting is 60. My wife's is 70. 10 numbers apart, but it truly is the world of difference. The Sleep Number sleep that you get is unbelievable. You will love it. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now you could save 50%. That's 50%. On the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com. Let's talk O'Reilly Auto Parts, people. Or as you might know from their jingle, O-O-O O'Reilly Auto Parts. They're in the business of keeping your car on the road. O'Reilly Auto Parts offers friendly, helpful service and the parts knowledge you need for all your maintenance and repairs. Because you know when you need your car fixed, you need somebody who knows what they're talking about and is helpful, has a smile on their face, and gets you back on the road. They've got thousands of parts and accessories in stock, either in-store or online, so you never have to worry if you're in a jam. The team at O'Reilly Auto Parts can test your battery for free in or out of your car. If it needs to be replaced, they'll help you just find the right battery for your vehicle. Need your windshield wipers replaced, a brake light fix, or a quick service? They'll help you find the right part or point you to the nearest local repair shop for help. Whether you're a car aficionado or an auto novice, you will find the employees at O'Reilly Auto Parts knowledgeable, helpful, and the best of all, friendly. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today or visit us at O'ReillyAuto.com/Eisen. That's O'ReillyAuto.com/Eisen.
What's the most pissed off you made Nick Saban ever?
Oh, when I took the sack second and 26 in a national championship.
Game. Yeah. You mean the one that you immediately made up for with an amazing play put you on the map?
Yeah.
That sack?
Yeah.
Okay.
That was the sack.
So walk me through how that, what he said to you, if you can, in a certain way on a live radio, TV broadcast.
I mean, I could only see it on camera, you know, how mad he was. That was probably the most pissed off, though, I think he's ever been at me. He was squeezing his headset so hard. And then, you know, like, it was hard because the emotion was, like, so mad to so happy, you know, so fast for him. And, you know, we got into the locker room when everything settled down. I mean, he was still the same coach, you know. Yeah. He pulled me to the side. Like, what were you thinking, you know?
So like, after you won the game, and you picking confetti out of your hair, he still took a moment to revisit that sack.
Yeah. Being who he is, I mean, you know, he pulled me to the side. He said, you know, well, why did you take the sack?
Right.
You know, and I thought it was a good time to joke with him, you know. So we won the national championship. So I told him, well, you know, we needed more room to throw the ball, coach. You know, and, like, he looked at me, and, like, I was laughing. He's like, that's not funny. I didn't know what else to do in that situation. I was like, okay, I'm sorry, coach. So I shook his hand, and he just moved on. I was like, oh. Like, oh, man.
That's amazing.
I love that story. Yeah. That made my favorite story of the whole week.
So you just figured, yeah, hey.
I was like, oh,
we
maybe.
Just won it?
Yeah. Thought it was a good time to joke, but it wasn't.
Wow. Yeah, nope. It's never a good time, I guess, in that respect.
Back to the Rich Eisen Show. Susie Schuster in for Rich Eisen, who is in Indianapolis, of course, and he will zoom in with us shortly. Peter King ahead as well, and Chris Russo. And guys, I think this morning, having him zooming in today, like, one of the more fun guests I've had on, I think, that we've actually been excited about talking to. And it's so funny because it's like I said to you guys, it's not even about asking him about who the Bears are going to take in the first round. It's about, where did you come from?
And yeah, right.
And, and how'd you come up with a persona? And I think that that's one of the things I love so much about being in an interview format is having people on that are actually interesting to you, you know, as opposed to just like, it's great to talk about LeBron, and I'm happy to do it all day because I love the NBA, but sometimes you get a guest on, and it's just, you book them only because you're curious about it as opposed to, you know, it being the news of the day, even though he does cover the news of the day, so it's kind of a two-for-one special.
Oh, I mean,
well, Wednesdays are Mad Dog days, right, Chris?
So Mad Dog days on First Take are some of the funniest things I've ever seen in the last couple of years.
Yeah.
just the absurdity and just the fun it looks like they're having, which is super great. I mean, look, this guy helped invent what we're in, the business that we're in right now, Mike.
Oh, yeah.
You know? So
anytime
you get a chance to talk to him, it's always special.
Who did you listen to as a kid?
Well, as a kid, I more or less just listened to games on the radio. So when we moved to Maine, you know, I was a big Red Sox on the radio, Celtics on the radio, because we didn't have cable growing up. So had to listen to games on the radio. And then after college, I was a big Rome guy. So I listened to Rome kind of every afternoon before I went to work at the my newspaper. So.
Did you rack them?
Rack them.
I never called in. I was not a caller. I was not a clone. I really just wanted to listen. And just for all the absurd things and the interviews back then. I mean, in the mid-2000s, there was really nobody better than Jim. So that's kind of where I killed some time and at the gym and getting ready for whatever, you know, girls soccer game or boys tennis match I was covering that afternoon in Southern Maine. So it was a lot of fun.
Mikey, who'd you listen to?
You're looking
this
at
guy.
Him. I mean, come on. It was
this
New
guy.
York. It was Stern and Mike and the Mad Dog. Those two are the – that's it. It's like you got both of them.
That was a full day.
And that was like a full day. If you go on it, in the old days. And Imus, of course, because he was local also.
Oh, God, I forgot Imus in the morning,
like,
of course.
It was Imus, Stern, and Mike Club. And the Mad Dog, man. Mike, and they were on, we were talking about this. They were on, like, I think they started a certain amount of hours, and then they'd be on like 5 hours. And they would have callers.
The whole day.
The whole day. I can't even imagine people waiting on hold 5 hours, waiting to talk to them. Just to talk, like, literally. We're going to bitch about the Yankees. We're going to bitch about the Mets, the Nets, the Knicks, whatever. You were going to have Rangers, whoever it was. And those guys just, they made it so interesting. And it was just like, it's like I get goosebumps because it's like my childhood.
That's
it's
fantastic.
Amazing.
Yeah, I mean, I'm always marveling at the patience that some of you guys have when you call in. And just and then I always wonder, like, are you in an office?
Right.
Is your boss does your boss know that you're sitting here on hold waiting to talk to a sports radio?
Just on hold.
It's amazing.
Right? It's
okay. Just waiting to call in and just be like, ah, I think that Donovan McNabb sucks and blah, blah, blah. And you're just like, oh, okay, cool. Thank you for contributing.
Yeah. And I was listening. You know, it's like, and some of the people that call in, I always feel like our callers really bring some interesting insight, but sometimes you're like, you waited 3 hours for that? Really?
You know, the first time you call, though, and I mean, I did it with Larry King in New York.
You called into Larry King?
Yes, the complaint about the
Mets.
You
called into Larry King. That's fantastic.
In like 80, might have been like 85. It was right when they won the World Series. And I remember waiting on hold, and I got on, and I froze. I wanted to complain about something. I was like, he's like, Mike Livingston. It's like, and I was like sitting there going, I couldn't speak. You get like little crazy when you get on the call. You're like sitting there going, oh my God, you're actually on the air with like Larry King. It's national. People can hear you all over America. Don't sound like an idiot. And of course, I sounded like an idiot that day.
Yeah.
You know, people underestimate what happens when they say, you know, you hear the crackle.
Yeah, like,
and then you're on.
And then you're on.
And then you're sitting here thinking, oh God, I have to be really good. Or people, you know, they think it's easy. It's not. You get very nervous. TJ, did you ever call into shows or before you were on this show?
Yeah, I mean, Chris knows this. Traditionally, I've never in my life been a big fan of sports talk radio. I don't know why. It was just a lot of people yelling and opinions that would – the host would give an opinion on Monday and then by Wednesday completely forgot what he said and gave you a completely different point of view. So I was never really into sports talk radio. Plus, you know, I'm from a small town in the middle of Pennsylvania, so we didn't get, like, these guys in their bigger areas, getting guys like Mad Dog and guys like that. You know, we got local guys. But, yeah, I used to call in, I think it was WFBG in Altoona when I was a kid. They used to always have radio contests. So I would call in, and I remember I answered one about the soap opera Guiding Light once.
And
I was, able to answer this question. That won, like, a free sub or something. I called and got on.
Fantastic.
So, wait, he called in about a soap opera. You've been on The Price is Right. You've got an eclectic, like, knowledge of television, don't you? You really do.
A little bit.
That's hilarious.
A little bit.
I wanted to call into some of the local stuff in Boston, and then, you know, then I would move to New York, and I worked at ESPN. I covered the Yankees a lot, so I would sit in the back of the John Sterling Michael Kay booth.
Oh, yeah.
And just hope that John Sterling would say my name. And every so often he'd say, like, Susie Schuster's here from ESPN. What a great kid. And honestly, that was it. I just the mention. It's like, just say my name right? But, I mean, John Sterling, come on. Also one of the all-time greatest. So you have to, you just want, all you want is for John Sterling to say your name. And then, you know, you're golden for a while. True story. Sorry. Just oversharing with you.
Love it.
In the first
and
hour.
I think I said that, I meant WRTA in Altoona now that I think about it. Just wanted to get it right.
Yeah. There you go.
I was a big concert ticket guy trying to call concert tickets.
Same.
That was big in New York.
Caller number 50.
Two Springsteen tickets.
What was your first concert, Mike?
Kid, I went and saw Springsteen.
Okay.
With my sister in college at Seton Hall when he played because she was good friends. She was the editor of the yearbook and good friends with the photographer. I held his bag while he took photos with Springsteen like a foot in front of me.
What?
I might have been in like sixth, seventh grade. Yeah. Right when Born to Run came out. And I remember like the only song I knew was Born to Run. Like I knew no other song he was playing. And I was a fan. As soon as I saw this guy live, I'm like, oh my God, he's like really good. I stole my brother's Born to Run album, played the whole thing, Jungle Land. That became my like one of my favorite albums to play. And back in the old days, you played the whole album because you wanted to hear all the songs. But literally, to this day, I think I still have the album I stole from my brother in my collection. And that was the first concert. Then Kiss, right after that.
I remember taking my brother's...
Kiss.
My brother's Springsteen. It had to have been Born to Run.
Yeah, it would be.
And playing it over and over again. But was The River on Born to Run?
No, that's The River.
That's on The River.
That's on The River.
Okay.
Born to Run is Jungle Land.
Jungle Land,
yeah. It's that whole group of amazing... Yeah, it was like, oh, man, that was such a great album.
Chris, what was your first?
My first concert was the New York State Fair in the fall of 1999. It was 98 degrees with a little known opener that night, Britney Spears.
Oh, no way.
Fantastic.
Not a concert guy growing up. And one of my college buddies, we took his little cousins, who are now like in their 30s. We took them to the concert at the State Fairgrounds in New York.
Sure.
And it was Britney Spears opening for 98 Degrees. It was hilarious.
That's a good double bill right there. I would take that right now.
Pretty good in September of 1999.
Sick. Well, thanks for asking. My first one was Sting.
Hey, Susie.
Yeah.
What was your first?
Thanks for asking. That's so nice of you.
Sorry.
It was Sting at Greatwoods. Followed up by Bon Jovi.
I'm wearing Sting on a t-shirt right now. So
yeah. Good, followed good, up by... You know, what? Really?
Yeah. Sting is on my t-shirt.
No, do we have Chris Russo? Is he
Sting.
On the...
Oh, different Sting, Chris?
Different Sting.
Oh,
I think
this
we're
is the wrestler.
Efforting.
We're efforting.
Okay.
Still efforting.
This
we're
is what
we
call ramping and having a casual conversation
we're
while we're ramping.
I'm sorry. Wait, hold up. Susie, you were... I'm sorry. You were saying Sting.
I was saying... Thank you. Thanks, TJ. I was saying it was Sting, followed right away by Bon Jovi. And I think
They weren't together, right?
It was back to back.
Someone told me you once had a Bon Jovi poster on your bedroom wall.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was fairly certain that Richie Sambora saw me in the crowd and thought, like, pointed at me in my, like, rugby shirt. I don't think I was his type.
And was like, what, you pull you on stage? Like,
I was waiting for my Courtney Cox moment. thinking like, I am so cool in my rugby shirt.
I hung out with Richie Sambora.
You did?
Night. Yeah.
He's like, the
year, like, I think 2011. I'm pretty sure it was at a Super Bowl party.
And how'd it
dope
go?
Guy. I can remember thinking Richie Sambora is a cool.
Oh, yeah.
It's a cool cat.
Oh, yeah.
Cool. Oh, yeah. Cool. Yeah.
He knows how to use a can of hairspray. Let's just say that.
Yeah. Right.
But yeah, I mean, I loved all that kind of like Def Leppard.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, good.
Oh, the 80s, of course.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the hair bands were fantastic. I loved all that.
Poison.
But then, Poison, of course.
Yeah.
See, I was a weird kid because, you know, growing up, I had friends of all different colors. So whereas I would always bring the rap to, like, our little hangout sessions, my best friend who lived in the alley behind me was very into heavy metal. So I was listening to, like, stuff like Van Halen and AC/DC and Def, stuff that I would have never heard on my own. But because we were friends, we got to, you know, exchange music like that.
Chris Russo, what a pleasure having you on The Rich Eisen Show. Thank you so much for your time. What's your best Bruce Springsteen song? Like, if we were to play Start Bench Cut, which is what we play here all the time, we're talking about music here, because let's face it, I'm not going to waste time talking with you about, like, what's the Bears going to do. On your...
If I had to... Wow. There's a lot of them. I think probably Rosalita would be the one that I'd have to take, partly because it's the song that goes way back that I remember, in, you know, album number 2. So I would take Rosalita as the number, as my number. Ties to Bind, I love as well. There's a lot of them. But I'm going to tell you Rosalita from Wild the Inner Street, East Street Shuffle. I did a camp thing once when I was a camp counselor in 1980, and we had a talent show, and I had all the campers dressed as Springsteen's members, and we lip-synced Rosalita. So I will go with Rosalita in that
song. Wow.
How about that?
That is fantastic. Give me, you know, I feel like having you on, you know, there's so many things I want to ask you, so I'm going to just rapid fire, if you don't mind.
Go ahead. Sure.
Where did Mad Dog come from?
Bob Raceman gave me that nickname back in 1988. I had just gotten to New York a year or so prior, and I was doing a show on WMCA, which used to be a legendary New York talk show back in the 60s. A lot of music, too, but, you know, a lot of great talk show hosts. Came from MCA, got a job there, and I worked weekends, 5 to 8, Saturday and Sunday. And Bob Raceman, who wrote for the New York Daily News and covered sports media, found me and gave me that Mad Dog nickname. So when I left MCA about a year, December of 88, I had the nickname a year or so before that. I went to FAN, which had just started, and then all the FAN guys, led by Don Imus, promoted the fact that we have a Mad Dog in the house. So Raceman to Imus to Mike and the Mad Dog. That's where that nickname came from.
That's awesome.
Back in 1988.
All right.
You need a nickname. You need a nickname in sports talk radio, especially back then. It separates you from the pack, Susie, having a nickname.
I got to think of one for myself. Okay. Dog, Doggy, Christopher, Chris. What do you like being called?
Well, Christopher. Chris, that's my name. So I'll say Christopher. Doggy, I like. Christopher. Dog, I don't. Mad Dog is too official. Doggy, Stephen A. calls me that, so that shows a familiarity to it. Christopher shows a little refinement. Chris is a little too, you know,
informal.
Christopher or Doggy are the two ways I would go.
I told you, Chris.
Yeah, but I said Doggy.
I told you, and I said, I'm not calling him Doggy.
Right.
It's just like, you and I don't have a relationship. I'd like to have one, but we don't have one. I'm not going to call you Doggy. I'm going to call you Christopher I'm going to have some respect. I'm going to say to you, Christopher, because I want to be formal.
They call me a lot of things. I had a nickname in high school. I went to a boarding school in upstate New York. I wore black patent leather shoes, so they called me Gucci in high school. So I have always had, whatever Gucci. The reason, I've always had a nickname. My whole life I've had a nickname, for crying out
loud. Well, they call me a lot of things behind my back, but I'm not going to say what they are here. Susie Schuster on The Rich Eisen Show, in for Rich. Chris Russo joins us. Christopher Russo joins us, and we're so thrilled to have you. Stephen A. is a very old friend of mine back from the Fox Sports Net days. What's the difference between working with him and working with Mike Francesa?
That's a good question. Wow. That's a very good question. I think Mike is a little more reserved, and I think you have to prove to Mike that you are on Mike's level from a sports perspective. Stephen A. takes you for what you are. He understands that the embellishment of it. Mike can be a little cynical about somebody who yells a lot. Stephen A. kind of loves that. So I would think that the enthusiasm level with Stephen A. plays a little better for him than it would for Mike. I would think the intellectual level, not saying that Stephen A. is as smart as a whip, but the intellectual level probably works a little better with Mike. To be on Mike's plane, intellectually, sports-wise, that takes some getting. You got to know how to do that, and you got to match that, and that's not that easy. Stephen A., you got to match his enthusiasm and his delivery, which is a different situation. So they're two different little skill sets. Both are, you can have a lot more thoughtful conversations sometimes with Mike and a lot more enthusiastic conversations sometimes with Stevie A.
What is the one sporting event that has caused you to be the most crazy, the most insane in your career?
Well, that's a good, one specific sporting event? Probably the 90 Buffalo Giant game in Tampa. I thought that the Bills, after beating Oakland 52-3 in the AFC Championship game, I thought they would kill the Giants. And I went on and on and on at the Tampa Hyatt thinking that this game would not be competitive. I had the game early, 21-3. And then by the time Friday at 6:05 came, I had it 49-13. And that was the final that I picked. Now, Peter King, the great, just retired, estimable Peter King, had it 35-14 Bills. For some reason, my 49-13 in New York resonated a little longer. And then I sat in the back of the end zone, the opposite side of Norwood's miss, saying, as that game went on, I said, boy, did I screw this up. And Mike was close to Parcells, and Mike went to Parcells. You're not going to believe this, Bill. My dopey partner thinks that the Bills are going to score 49 on you. And Bill told him, tell that little ham and egger, there is no way I'm allowing the Bills to score 49 points. Bill was right. I was wrong. 2019 Giants Super Bowl 25. Hell of a game.
Wow.
Susie, a hell of a game.
I love it. Peter King joins us in the next hour. So we're back to back. You and I are lockstep with our admiration of him. What about the moment where you said, I am the luckiest guy in the world to be working in this job, to be being able to be myself calling sports?
That's a good one, too. Wow. When's the moment that I really felt very fortunate? I would say, I know this is going to sound a little weird because it just kind of occurred. I would say probably that first time a couple years ago when I did First Take. I did a First Take. I just went in there. It was January last 2 years ago. Stevie A called me. I went in. I did two segments on Clemens and Bonds and why they shouldn't be in the Hall of Fame and something on the Packers who had just lost to San Francisco in a divisional game in the snow in Lambeau. The next day, ESPN called me, and a day after, they signed me to a contract. That's freaking free at 62 years of age. That is fortunate. So I'd have to say that would be one. I think the other one would be the first day in 2003 when I did two books, and my first book that came out, Greatest Sports Arguments of All Time, when you write a book and the book comes out on a Tuesday and boxes of it are delivered to either your house, radio stations, I think that's important too. And I remember one year I went to go do the Today Show. This would have been probably summer of 2003. And I was doing the Today Show, and I walked by Barnes & Noble and the greatest sport and Fifth Avenue, and the Greatest Sports Argument book was in the window. I think that, I said, geez, look at that. Barnes, Fifth Avenue, I got that. A stupid little book that I could care less about. That too, those two I can give you.
And how about the moment in sports that has affected you most personally?
Well, I mean, I think it's probably Magic Johnson when he announced he had HIV. That was in 90. Mike and I had just started Remember, he had a press conference in November that day at 4 o'clock. They called the press conference that afternoon. This was not something that was, okay, Magic on November 4th is going to announce his retirement. They called that press conference probably in the morning because his health insurance came back and he had the blood disorder. And he had the press conference at 4 o'clock, and Mike and I were on the air. And to be on the air when Magic Johnson is announcing his retirement from professional basketball, that to me was one of the most dramatic moments that I've ever done. To be on the air when that occurred. The other one that I think of, and this is a tragedy, we were on the air when Corey Lytle, with his test pilot, crashed his plane into an apartment building at 72nd Street and Park. That was a day of a Met Cardinal in 06, of a Met Cardinal playoff game, NLCS, at Shea. It got rained out. And Mike and I were on the air all day from soaked Shea. And that accident happened, I'm going to guess, 2, 3 o'clock. And we had all sorts of transportation. That was a very dramatic day. He had just pitched for the Yankees 2 days before that. And we had talked to him on the air because we yelled at him. And we had him on Monday. And this happened like on Wednesday. Those two, very, very dramatic, Susie. Very dramatic.
Two more minutes with Christopher Russo, unless you can hang out for a commercial break, which I might say to you.
I can hang on, Susan.
Can you?
You're doing a great job.
But this is so fantastic. Thank you so much. All right. Mount Rushmore of media. You have to put some guys up there or ladies. Who are they? And it could be TV. It could be print. Any form of media. Who would they be?
You're going to just sports media or
sports
all media.
You can, if okay. You want to add Paul Harvey, go add Paul Harvey.
But I know I was going to add. I would add Howard. But
you
not
can add Howard.
Let's just do sports, because I think that's a little easier. Cosell would have to be considered in there. I know this is going to sound crazy, and people are going to think I'm nuts.
Ooh.
Dick Young has to be in here. Dick Young is the first writer who covered a team in ways that you and I, Susie, would recognize. The Dodgers in the late 40s, Jackie Robinson. He was very, very significant, had an incredible amount of impact. That's two. Let's see. Boy, that's a very good question. I hadn't thought of that. That's two. Now, this is personal for me, so I'm going to put Enberg there.
Nice. That's beautiful.
Because Enberg is he is a tremendous, tremendous play-by-play guy. And I grew up with him. So I'm going to put Enberg there. Now, I'll tell you a quick little thing on Enberg. 08 or 09, I'm doing spring training shows for Sirius. So I go to the Peoria. San Diego's playing somebody, and I'm in the ballpark at 7 a.m. He was doing Padre games. This is at the end of his career. He was in that was their first spring training game on TV. And Dick Enberg was in the clubhouse at 7 o'clock in the morning preparing for a spring training game, Padres and Mariners, whoever they were playing. Think about that. Dick Enberg, who did 3,000 Super Bowls. I was so impressed. So I will put Enberg. You have to put Cosell in there for Monday Night Football. I will put myself. I'm going to put Dick Young. And although I'm not an Olympic fan, I got to put Rune Aldridge in there, too.
Beautiful.
Olympics, Monday night, I got to put Aldridge in there. That's a nice. Weird crew. I probably would refine it, but top of my head, Susie, those are the four I give you.
Let's go to break. When we come back, we'll have a couple more minutes with Christopher Russo, because honestly, this is the most fun we've had for a while, and we're going to ask you about Brent Musburger, who's on tomorrow as well. So let's go to break. Let's go to break. When we come back, much more with Christopher Mad Dog Russo. This is so fun.
It's that time of year, people. Spring has sprung, and that means spring cleaning, or at least The partner in your life is demanding that you do it. Whether that means stocking up on cleaning supplies or swapping out your winter clothes for new spring clothes, make sure you're using Ibotta and get real cash back with every purchase. Ibotta is a free app that gives you the most cash back every time you shop on hundreds of items from groceries to beauty supplies to toys. The average Ibotta user earns $256 per year. That could cover the cost of an entire shopping trip, that flight you've been eyeing, or the fancy dinner you've been craving. Join the over 50 million users and earn cash back every time you shop from over 2,700 brands and retailers. And right now, Ibotta is offering our listeners $5 for just trying Ibotta by using the code EISEN when you register. Just go to the App Store or Google Play Store and download the free Ibotta app to start earning cash back and use my code EISEN. That's IBOTTA in the Google Play or App Store and use my code EISEN.
What's up, everyone? It's Reality Steve, your number one source for all things Bachelor Nation and reality TV. Every day, I'm giving you the behind-the-scenes juice and your info on all your Bachelor Nation stories and also interviewing some of your favorite reality stars. My name has been synonymous with spoilers, but I'm so much more than that. Give me a listen.
The Reality Steve Podcast, part of the Believe Network. Just search BLEAV on YouTube or wherever you listen.
Back here on the Rich Eisen Show, Susie Schuster in for Rich Eisen, and Chris Russo has been generous enough to stay with us during the commercial break, and we love having you on, so thank you very, very much. We talked about Brent Musburger before the break, and Dan Patrick has been very vocal about saying that he can't believe that Brent is not in the Hall of Fame. Brent is our guest tomorrow, old friend of mine. Can you think of a reason why he's not in the NFL Hall of Fame?
It's an absolute disgrace. I've screamed about that as well. Good job by Danny. He's been all over it recently. That was a great CBS documentary that they did on the NFL Today show during the Super Bowl, before the in the pregame. This is a guy that formed the NFL Today. And the fact that he does not have that Roselle Award is an absolutely mind-boggling scenario. Now, listen, Brent was not a great sharer. Brent wanted to do everything. You know, he wanted to do the NCAA. He wanted to do the NBA. He wanted to do studio. He wanted to do the Masters, the Indianapolis. So he probably, you know, rubbed a few people the wrong way, because it's a lot of the times it's about Brent. And I think that, you know, that didn't end well at CBS. You know, they got rid of him in 90 because, you know, he was sort of so empowered at the network that they just wanted to spread some of the workload around. And Brent did so much. That's probably got a little something to do with it. But other than that, I don't know, Susie. I mean, that to me, I mean, Berman's won the award. Andrea Kramer's won the award. Irv Cross, now African-American, very important, but he won the award. He was on a show. Cosell won the award. I mean, go look at the list of people who have won that award, and somehow Brent Musburger, 1975, and he was on there live. You are looking live at all these games. I mean, that really is hot. Now, listen, probably didn't make a ton of friends. I'll be the first to say that. But as far as his ability and how good he was at what he did in the studio, and his he was a pioneer in a and now that they all do it, they do 5-hour pregame shows. So Brent, to me, that is an absolute disgrace. Hall of Fame should be embarrassed that Brent Musburger is not in there. And Dan Patrick, who has been screaming about it, you are 1,000% correct, is 100% right. He's got to be in the Hall of Fame. I'm with you.
Yep, Christopher Russo here on the Rich Eisen Show. We are talking about Brent Musburger, and I'm sitting at the Rich Eisen Show Radio Network desk. I'm furnished by Grainger with supplies and solutions for every industry. Grainger's got the right product for you. Call clickgrainger.com or just stop by. I wonder if it has to do with gambling, because he spoke about gambling long before the NFL got
Embedded
with it.
Maybe, and then he worked for VEASAN, you know, which was an issue with gambling too. So that might have a little something to do with it. I don't know if Brent, probably, you know, again, he was omnipresent on that show. He ran the roost. That probably has got something to do with it. It can't be an oversight, because enough people have screamed about this for a long period of time, lately by Dan. And everybody knows that it's a disgrace that he's not in there.
All right, we'll go into rapid fire mode, just because I have so many questions, and I know Christopher over here has one as well.
Yeah.
The next 5 years of Bill Belichick's life are going to look like?
head coach again. I'd be shocked if he doesn't. Somebody will take a run at him after this year. I was surprised he didn't get a job after this past season with either Dallas, even Atlanta. I thought Washington would be perfect. But those programs decided to go in a different direction. There will be an owner next year after somebody has a big-time disappointing year that's going to want to win a title quickly. Belichick can still be he's still a great coach. I think you'll see him again on the sideline. I really do. I'd be surprised if he's not.
Chris, what do you got?
You made a lot of headlines with your half a gummy and a 10K on Colorado earlier this year. What's the best bet you've ever made?
I'm going to tell you right now. Well, I did a couple. One, I bet the Giants in 10 at 13-1 to win the World Series before the year started. And they did. That was a good one. But how about the plays that I made in Vegas before this year's Super Bowl? I went to South Point. I made five plays. Susie, Chris, are you ready for these? Here they are.
I'm writing them down.
McCaffrey, over 4.5 receptions.
Okay.
Justin Watson, and I was going to bet MVS, but they didn't have him on the board because he had missed practice and I would have lost. Justin Watson, over 16.5 yards receiving. That's number two. I bet the Chiefs on the money line. Okay?
A plus 130, on the money line. Something like that?
It was 114.
Okay.
I bet it was something else in which I won. Northern Kentucky and Oakland in a college basketball over 2 days before that. And yes, I'm a degenerate. And then here's two that unbelievably I got. A Chief fourth down conversion, which they got an OT, and it had to be done not via penalty. And number five, Mahomes, over 1.5 touchdown passes.
Yeah, buddy.
Last play of the game. Now, that, Susie, let me hear from you. That is an incredible Sunday at the Super Bowl. That's pretty good.
I'm trying to put my jaw back in my head here because it dropped really, really hard.
Five for five, baby.
Oh, baby.
We got 2 minutes to a hard out. I'm in a panic. I want to ask you about who the Bears are going to take with the first pick, but I'm almost more interested to hear on your thoughts on the Kennedy assassination because I know that's one of your favorite topics. So,
oh, I love it.
Rob, you get to
Reiner,
go.
Who Rob Reiner, who I had on when he did this great 10-part series, which is airing on, you get it on your podcasts. I had Rob on for an hour, early December? He was great. And if you think, or if America thinks, that Lee Harvey Oswald decided to go up on that book depository thing by himself and shoot the president of the United States, because whatever the case, if you think that, you are absolutely nuts. I used to think mob. Rob made me think CIA. So some sort of combination of CIA and mob. And I could even make the argument, as Reiner did, that he may have not even been on the sixth floor at 1 something in the afternoon when Kennedy was shot. How about that?
That's fantastic. We got 30 seconds to a hard out. Quickly, Bears are taking?
I think they're going to take Caleb Williams of USC. The GM can't afford not to. If he keeps Fields, trades the pick, Fields has a middling career, and Williams turns out to be Mahomes, he will never live it down the rest of his life. He will go the safe route and take Williams out of USC and trade Fields for a couple of draft picks.
Really appreciate you coming on today. Loved having
you.
You
got it. Knock him dead. Chris, you too. Susie, knock him dead.
Listen,
love you, doggy.
And I want to just say to you, it is such an inordinate pleasure to have you. We're on Roku only now. We just went to break for radio, but you get the drift. But, I mean, it's just so much fun having you on because, look, we all listen to sports radio all the time. But, like, this is... I like asking questions that are a little bit more interesting because I always tell everybody, like, you can listen to your take on the Bears pretty much anywhere, right? But I'm still interested in things like, do you think the NIL is, you know, screwing up college sports forever?
Yeah,
I'm a former ABC sports reporter, so, you know, yeah. I lived college football for so long. Do you think the NIL has spoiled players?
Yeah, I think it's a major mess. I think it's very difficult to build your teams. They bounce around. I understand why. If coaches can leave, why can't the players leave too? Coaches have to pay a penalty if they leave, but this is a mess. College athletics, it's a year-to-year thing right now in basketball and in football. A couple guys don't play. You hear what Patino said? He had two players as freshmen who he didn't play. And if he did, and if it was now, they would have left NIL. And those players, Silva, Peyton Silva, and somebody else, helped them win a championship 2 years down the road. You can't do that today in college basketball or football. It's a major problem. I understand why the judge and, you know, if coaches leave, the college athletics is a cesspool. I get all that. But it's hurt the sport. There's no question about
it. I really appreciate your time. I hope you'll come back again next time.
Anytime,
I'm in the chair. This has been fantastic.
Anytime.
And also send my love to Stephen A.
I sure will.
Thanks a lot.
Welcome to Talkville,
the ultimate Smallville rewatch podcast. Guest star Sarah Carter as Alicia Baker.
Although I didn't really work with her a lot.
But Tom did, and they had some real big smoochy scenes.
Yeah. Should we talk about that?
Could there be any more sex? What was a three-page makeout scene that just kept going? Good Lord. We get it. They have chemistry.
Jump in now or catch up on any of the past seasons of Talkville on YouTube or wherever you listen.